You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
LeVar Arrington and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's return to the NFL, where the Tom Brady free agency rumor mill was working overtime this weekend. On Saturday, Brady, Julian Edelman, and Jimmy Fallon were courtside at the UNC-Syracuse game, and Edelman appeared to say he's coming back, while Brady smirked next to him. Then they were spotted FaceTiming with Titans coach Mike Vrabel, whose team is in the running to land Brady. LeVar, do you like how Brady is handling this offseason?
I do. I mean, he's polarizing enough and he's interesting enough for people to be totally enthralled by what he may or may not do. And listen, he has every right to handle it how he's doing it. And I think it's very strategically sound. I think that you can look at it as it being a tad bit passive aggressive towards who I do not know.
FaceTiming at a college game.
Well, here's
letting
the thing,
everybody
though.
See that you're FaceTiming.
Did he put that out there?
Game.
Did he put that out there?
Yeah, but look.
Did he put that out there?
Come on. If you're Tom Brady and Julian Edelman and you're at a public event,
so he can't
do
be,
you think the cameras are not going to be on you?
He
and
can't
if you're
be a
FaceTiming
dude.
Some, come on.
You know how many times I've hit TJ up and was like, TJ, look at these race cars or what we got going on. Like,
and where
you
were
hit
you?
Your friends in the public.
Like where? Not
yeah,
Publix.
Why are you laughing?
The thing about this is
he's not rolling with you right now. I'm telling you.
We're acting like Tom Brady is supposed to be like this introverted, non-social type of human that has no type of feelings or connection to reality.
No, but I don't want him to be a 14-year-old girl either.
But have we seen this side of Tom, especially when it came to this?
Come on.
Because he's been under this cloak, this mask for so long, other than the Uggs commercial, which I didn't really like. But with the Patriots, it was always the Patriots where you didn't show kind of any emotion in regards to, you didn't talk back. You didn't buck the system, but now it seems like he's that old guy, okay, that now just accomplished everything. That's like, I don't care. You know, I'm going to show who I really am in some aspects.
I like that. But I still think that he's in the moment. And the reason why everybody's paying attention to it is because they know that he's either coming back or he's leaving. And it's never been so much of an issue and a topic until now. And that's why you've never seen this side of it. You've never had the opportunity to see it. He's never been this close to leaving.
Help me out here.
I like it. And I'm going to tell you, like, why are we surprised? He had a Tom versus Time, basically, reality TV show or Facebook show.
Yes, he did.
And so it's not a surprise that now that he's kind of established himself, he started to do commercials. He put this out on Facebook. He looked uncomfortable at the game when Edelman FaceTimed, right? He didn't look like, he probably was like.
Because he knows. Because he knows
but
the
that's
cameras
not on
are
him.
On.
But that's not on him.
That was an uncomfortable feeling. How he's handling this is fine because he wants it to be intrigue on where everybody knows he's leaving New England. The people that don't,
I don't just, think
it's,
he
it's,
is.
It's wishful thinking.
Maybe it is.
He's okay, leaving New England, look, and so it's just if he, where am I going?
If he weren't an icon in New England, if this wasn't one of the major topics in the offseason, I get kind of teasing people and playing with them, but the whole, like, he's got to know. he's got to know what Edelman's putting out there. And he's got to know that if you're not just FaceTiming, it's one thing for you two to FaceTime. You're FaceTiming with a head coach who wants you to play for
that's
him next
old
year.
That's his old teammate.
Oh, wait, but
so is that tampering?
Well, okay, but it's something.
But isn't it kind of, I love this part because now he's taking control of his own narrative and what he wants and how he wants to control it. Because for so many years, he is, and subtly, it doesn't have to be outright. He can throw little jabs out there, so you have to interpret what he wants you to do before everything was told for him. When the stuff went down with Jimmy G, it was more so, he doesn't want to mentor Jimmy G. He's, this is the next guy coming up. So he could never really say anything or do anything. Right now, I think he's in a position in his career that he's still trying to control the narrative. He may not have been as comfortable doing it, but we wouldn't have seen Tom Brady do that six years
ago.
Here's
the thing. He's not controlling it.
Why not?
Because Edelman's the one who's throwing it out there, and then he has to react to what Edelman did.
But, Rick, is it intrigue right now where you don't know what he wants to do? In his mind, he knows what he wants to do.
Are you sure?
I believe Tom is old enough to know exactly what he wants to do.
I got to tell you.
I have to agree with that. He has a pretty good idea.
He got a plan on what he wants to do.
I get that, but this is a guy who has, as I said, he is a legend with the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. Playing this teasing game of, I'm staying or I'm going, who knows what I'm going to do. It's like you're playing with the heartstrings of all these people.
How is he doing that?
He would prefer.
How is he doing
because
that?
New England had
because
valued him the way he values New England.
That's a different thing.
He would stay there. But because they did not, this intrigue is going to be there because they've created this. Not him. They've created this.
How have they created it? What have they done? They haven't said anything.
They said everything without saying anything. His contract, we can't franchise you. So they're basically saying, we know after this year you're going to, we're going to offer you peanuts every year. You're going to take it every year.
You're reading a lot into the situation.
No, I'm not reading. That's what the book is telling me.
Has Brady taken less?
He's always taken less.
For the last however many years. Now he's tired of it because, I'm going to take less and they're going to give me weapons.
But they're not giving him what he wants.
Okay, I'm going to take less. They're going to give me. When they continue to say we're going to get you weapons and they don't.
Have we already determined what they're going to offer him this time around?
Obviously, it's not enough.
How do we know that?
It was reported that it was $30 million.
To this point, he would
never. Somebody reported that.
But you also know there's going to be talk inside. Just because we don't hear the narrative in the media doesn't mean that the agents and behind closed doors they haven't thrown out numbers.
When's the last time you seen a player with the name Tom Brady hit the market? When a team really wants you, you do not hit free agency. They don't let that happen.
They might.
Yeah.
They might.
Uh-huh.
No. If they really want you, you sign a deal.
This is below Tom Brady.
Why?
Because if they decide not to give him anything, right? If they undercut him, and he has made it clear, you know what? I wanted to be back. He has not made that clear. He's doing the exact opposite. He goes, I'm playing the field. So when the Patriots go, yeah, you know what? We decided to move on. He no longer gets to play the card of, I've always been there for you. I've taken less. I can't believe you did this to me. He's not doing that. When you're FaceTiming Mike Vrabel, you don't get to play that card anymore.
What do you think he just did the last year? He did that. That's all he's done.
Right.
They've shown him.
And they've won Super Bowls as a result of that.
Not without him.
Okay.
Well, with
fair
him.
Enough, but the combination of what he's been able to do and what they've been
when
able
they
to do
show
has
you,
worked to this
when
point.
When they show you how they feel, why should you keep... You were the woman.
So and he's you, been you, unhappy no, no, all you, this no, time with what you, he's been
you,
getting paid.
You meet a woman, you want to take her out. You send her multiple text messages. She don't respond. How many damn text messages you gonna send her?
You know what?
She just don't want to go out with me. She ain't feeling me.
So we're not talking about a girlfriend. We're talking about the wife.
Okay, the wife.
And now the wife has to say, baby, I still love you. We've been married for 20 years. I'm aware of that. It's nice, but I already know. I know where we're at, okay?
You hope you know where you're at.
You guys are making it sound like we've suddenly got to this point where they're undercutting him. He's taken less all these years, and they've made that work to the success of both of them. So if they decide to part ways, I want to be able to play the card of, you know what? I wanted to continue this. However we were going to do it, we were going to continue it. Tom Brady is not playing that card. Tom Brady is going, you know what? I've had about enough of this.
But when did he start doing that? Because if you track him during the course of the year and right after, he wasn't like this. He talked about ending his career in New England.
And what he was doing this at the beginning of last season.
Your interpretation.
He was talking about ending his career. He knew that at that particular time, he wasn't going to get into it during the season. He wasn't going to let that look at it objectively.
He started to do it after the season, not during.
Let's look at all the things that he was doing in social media last summer already. He was already hinting that this train was about to pull into the
station. Because he's privy to certain things that we aren't. That's why. Oh, we're going to give you this contract, and we agree not to franchise you. Mm-hmm. So you don't believe him and his agent, his representation, sat down and said, okay, this is what we're looking for.
A year in advance?
He knows.
This isn't beneath Tom Brady. Tom Brady isn't doing anything that would bring reproach on himself or his family or even the New England Patriots organization.
I think that's still to be determined.
No, I don't.
Depending on where his career goes next, what decision he makes, where if he goes someplace. I mean, here's the other part. I'm still not 100% convinced that he's leaving New England.
I don't know, but all that equity that he's built up, that he's leaving.
He's out of there.
All right, but see, Rick, all that equity that he's built up over the year, you think is going to be diminished all right now? That's what you're saying.
LeBron James had a show to say where he was taking his services to.
And he left.
But you're saying that he's putting that at harm's way.
But listen, he's always going to be tied to New England, that franchise, to
no matter what.
Yeah.
But he is the goal.
He's going to be the goal. He's going to be the gold standard.
He should continue to take less because that's how you look at him and that's how everybody else looks at him.
I'm not saying what he should take or how he should negotiate this. I'm just saying when you're FaceTiming a coach who's interested
in you, and you have your buddy saying he's coming back, tell him one more time.
Hey, if they play that clip again, he looked uncomfortable.
That's the same dude that ran over
that
top of
a
Lamborghini.
Like a
if Tom Brady was walking out of the club, he ain't getting arrested. You know who getting arrested? The friend that ran over top of the car.
This is really interesting.
He's not responsible for what Edelman does.
LeVar, you believe he could go back there?
Yes.
So what the hell are we doing? Like, why?
But I understand your position. You guys still have not said something
that's so egregiously done by Tom Brady that it says he's never going back to Foxborough based off of what he's doing.
I'm with you.
What is he doing?
I'm with you. It's not egregious. It's just kind of silly. Like, you're either going or you're staying. He's playing this game.
But if he doesn't know,
how did you feel when he came out, Tom versus Time? How'd you feel about that?
I thought it was some kind of goofy thing. that was marketing, man. Come on.
That's what this is.
Dan Wojcicki is back with us. Let's return to the NBA, where the Clippers have won 4 straight and have people thinking they're finally starting to put it all together. Kawhi Leonard spoke about the team's recent hot streak, saying they aren't getting complacent and still need to get better. He also talked about similarities to his old championship teams in San Antonio and Toronto.
We're striving to get there. You know, one thing is that you never know what's going to happen down the road. You know, it feels like, you know, like my previous teams, like you mentioned, with everybody just wanting to win and, you know, trying to make a sacrifice, staying confident. So I just think if we keep doing that, we could be successful. But, I mean, it always doesn't work to your favor. It's a lot of luck in it, but, you know, calls, making shots, and people staying healthy. So I just think we got to just keep moving, going on with the right track and, you know, staying positive.
Jim, don't get sucked into Kawhi's energy. Why?
Does that guy ever shut up or what? Jeez. Yeah. Oh, artists. Man.
And tone it down.
Yeah. Ugh.
So, are the Clippers surging to the title?
Well, I think when they put the roster construction together, this was a team that I think people identified as that could win the title. I don't think that's changed much.
I think they were the favorite.
They were the favorite. But here's the thing I think with the Clippers you got to keep in mind, identity-wise. We know who Milwaukee is, their depth, defensively, they can come at you in different ways. The Lakers, they're big, they're long, they block shots. You have a leader in LeBron James. With the Clippers, we thought we were going to figure some things out early. Defensively, they will be able to shut people down.
Sure.
But because of the injuries, the lack of playing time, the lack of continuity, we don't know who they are. Plus, you added in Marcus Morris and Reggie Jackson. So now we're trying to get a sense of who this team is going to be once they get to the playoffs. So the questions are still in the air. It's not a matter if the talent is there. Can they win the title? Are they... Can they bring it all together? And what Clipper team are we going to see consistently once that roster really plays more games together? That's the question I think people are more looking at.
Yeah, I mean, that's the word, is consistent, consistently. And that's what would keep me from saying that they're the clear favorites. I do think they have the best top-to-bottom roster of the top-tier teams in the NBA. I believe that. I think they've proven that, you know, against the Lakers, the two times we've seen those teams. The Clippers haven't played well, really, in either of those games. Paul George didn't play in the first one, struggled in the second one. You know, to me, the thing with the Clippers and what we're seeing right now is that this was the plan, right? This was always going to be a...
Choppy season.
Yeah,
like
and
this.
It was going to be something, not the injury so much, but it was going to be a very slow build. From day one, they've talked about this. They weren't coming out to win 75 games this regular season. That didn't mean anything to them. It certainly didn't mean anything to Kawhi Leonard. They wanted to be as good as possible when the playoffs started. They wanted to be as healthy as possible when the playoffs started. And if seeding and stuff like that worked out, fine. But that was all secondary to the other things. So I think what we've seen is the Clippers kind of plan sort of work. And to your point about adding those guys, I think if they were a more established team early in the season and they didn't have these injuries, it'd be harder. Right. But they were building from nothing anyways. Right. They didn't really have any continuity without those guys. What's the difference in adding two more?
For me, they were the clear favorite, and they continue to be the clear favorite. And it gives me pause that they have been feeling themselves, or at least it looks like they've heard or read the press clippings back when we had clippings. And so that makes me a little nervous for a team that hasn't technically accomplished anything.
Sure.
But that said, when they came out game one against the Lakers, and that was a game that was both teams trying to make a statement, and they won. And then you had the second game, and that was an opportunity for both teams to make a statement. And I look at they are top six in both defensive and offensive efficiency, even in spite of everything.
Right.
And there's only three other teams that can say that. Boston, Toronto, Milwaukee, the Lakers, and Boston are the only other three teams. So there's only one other team that can say they are balanced at both ends of the floor to the level that the Clippers are in the Western Conference. And it's the team that they've beaten twice and that I think that they match up well with.
That win Friday against Denver last week was as dominant. As a team that I've seen in person this year look. It was just smothering on defense.
Right.
They get so many open jump shots. They can get to the basket. You know, I think ultimately, right, like the thing that holds me back from saying it is the word you guys have both used. It's just been consistency. Like, what's going to happen when they're challenged in a way they haven't had to respond to some of the ebbs and tides of the season?
For a stretch.
They just haven't had to do it.
And, you know, the difference is, too, like San Antonio's, they got a little bit older. They weren't concerned as much as far as seeding being the number one team.
Right.
Because they knew that once they got into a playoff series, they can regain home court advantage. But the difference is that team had been playing together for a while, the core group.
Right.
You may have interchangeable parts, but the core, and I think that's what you're saying about the Clippers. And to your point, I don't think they're worried so much if they get to two seed or three seed. They'll be able to figure it out.
They don't. No. They're not worried at all.
They're not worried, but the consistency part is what I think that you're talking about right there.
There was a feeling, and I've had conversations with people higher up in that organization. And it was a sense that I think people would be a lot more comfortable if they played the way that they played over these past four games for another week or so.
Right.
Sure. If they could just see it for a little while. And then if they want to get back into the let's wait for the playoff mode, I think they just want to see it for a long extended period because it really hasn't happened yet this year.
I think it's part of the plan. Yeah. All right, to LA's other team, the Lakers, who are sitting in the one seed in the West, but are still looking to add some pieces. Reportedly, Dion Waiters just had an impressive workout with the team, and they also worked out LeBron's old buddy, J.R. Smith, who hasn't even been on a team this season after getting waived by Cleveland over the summer. Jim, do the Lakers look desperate here?
No, I think this might be a play for Rich Paul just because he represents Dion Waiters to kind of get him in there. JR had been talking about that anyway before. They knew they were going to have to add pieces to this team slowly.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't have a lot of assets to go out and trade and get. I don't think it'll look desperate. But they know, like, championship teams, you got to tweak your roster. You got to add something here or there. And if it's JR, he has a relationship with LeBron. Just, you know.
Oh, what about the Deion thing?
What I just say? What I just say about that? That's window dressing.
I think, right, this is what you do when you have that empty roster spot. The guys that you can work out because of the league rules, right? They have to be guys that aren't on teams right now and guys that weren't waived, right?
Like, okay, but why create the spot in the first place?
I have a theory, and it's just, this is not, I don't know this, but they waived a shooter in Troy Daniels.
We're up into those.
Right? Yeah, they waived a shooter in Troy Daniels, right? And let's just say that they are serious about Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith, that this wasn't just favors or make-dos for people that LeBron from his past. Both those guys are bigger players, right, than Troy Daniels. Mm-hmm. Both those guys offer a little bit more on the defensive side of the basketball. And when you talk to people, and now look, nobody will ever say Deion Waiters, lockdown defender. J.R. Smith, though, at a time was a pretty good defender. Now this is 3-4 years ago we're talking about.
I was going to say.
It's been a while. But they're big, and they're right. Bigger than Troy Daniels. And I think if there's one common criticism of the Lakers is they just don't have enough size defensively on their wings.
Okay, but.
But if you're going to do that, you can find other. Then work out Tony Allen.
So the bottom line is they may not be desperate, but they look desperate. Like, what are you doing? With J.R. Smith, I can't remember the last time I saw him play a meaningful game. Deion Waiters, we know what he went through in Miami.
I'll throw this at you, though, Rick. They look desperate when they worked out Dwight Howard this summer, too. I'll throw that.
You know what? That's a nice throwback. But
thank you.
Yeah, I know.
I do this for a living in the city, Rick.
Oh, lost for words.
Okay, right, but here's the bottom line. They did look desperate, and it worked out. Are you telling me?
Double down.
No, honestly.
Should always keep gambling your winnings. Should always keep betting once you're ahead.
I want to play blackjack with you. Let's move to Baltimore, where Lamar Jackson electrified the league and won the MVP award this year, but came up short in the playoffs and doesn't seem to understand why. Lamar says he's still puzzled by the loss, insisting that the Ravens had a good approach and played well, despite getting dominated for most of the game and losing by double digits to the Titans. LeVar, do these comments change your view of Lamar?
It absolutely does change my view of Lamar. I think even more highly of the young man now. I think that this is a smart, strategic way to answer. I think it's a candid moment to say, I don't know why we didn't win, because he probably felt as well as they were playing, they would have success against any team that they play and possibly go win the Super Bowl. But with that being said, you're not going to tell the media and tell the public why we lost. Here's why we lost, Rick. Let me tell you. The Tennessee
Titans
did.
You think he's disingenuous?
I don't think it's disingenuous. I think that he was genuinely puzzled by the fact that they lost. But that does not mean that he has to go any further than telling you, I can't understand why we lost, when in reality, if he did know why they lost and they looked at the film, I'm not going to tell the media this is what we did, because now everybody's going to be like, oh, I can base what we're doing off of what Lamar just said in this interview. So I think it's smart. It's not disingenuous. That's using wisdom.
I like the way that he's somewhat owning up to the team obviously struggling in the playoffs, but this does not change my view of him in any sense, because I was never a believer in the Ravens to begin with.
Oh, wow.
Simply, I'll go ahead and tell you.
That means you weren't a believer in Lamar Jackson.
I was not a believer in the way that offense was putting up points and would they be able to continue that in the playoffs.
Ooh, wow.
And it's simply because this is why. Kind of like what you said on the first segment. Mm-hmm. Going to the playoffs, performing in the playoffs is something that's a daunting task. And you look back at last year when they played the Los Angeles Chargers in the playoffs. Obviously, they lost that game. Lamar didn't play well. And because of how this team is so predicated on the run game, predicated on the read option, and that allowing the tight ends, that trio of tight ends that they have, being able to run free downfield opens up so much for the offense. Well, I knew that if the Baltimore Ravens run into a team that can stop the run and force Lamar to play more from the pocket, I knew that they probably would have a dud of a game in the playoffs. I didn't think it would be the Tennessee Titans.
Right.
But I'm not surprised that you saw that type of a game out of that offense in the playoffs, because the test of time will always be the accurate pocket passer quarterbacks. Ooh. That's something that's going to always be.
Right.
So that did not completely surprise me, and I wasn't shocked at all.
Right. I don't see it changed my view. I think it enhanced it in this perspective that he wants to get better, because he kind of answered his own question within this statement. He said, I don't know how we lost, but if you go down a little bit further, you know, we were flat the whole night. The game was not on our defense. I felt like we didn't execute on offense. Mm. We put up points. If we put up more points, it would have been a great game. So he kind of told you, on one, we had a game plan in place, but it wasn't our defense. It was our offense. And down here he says further about how he wants to improve.
Their defense got tore out the frame, but that's fine.
But he kind of gave you the answers within his statement.
Them wasn't answers.
Yeah, I know.
Them wasn't answers.
But I know.
But I hear what you're saying.
But he. I think for Lamar, it's all a learning experience. Again, young quarterbacks going through the fire. We want them to succeed right away without getting that hurt, without getting that pain of disappointment. And the only way you grow from that is to have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and say, you know what, I didn't perform up to expectations.
And that's true.
You know, that's something young quarterbacks have to go through.
I like that.
And right now, we're going to see exactly how much he's grown from this next year and how much more I think the Ravens offense trust in him with the play calling next year.
His admission that he needs to get better at everything and his desire to do that and his commitment to do that, all of that I like. But if he is being disingenuous, if he didn't say I was puzzled, he says I'm still puzzled as to why we lost. So if he knows and he's just not talking about it, then that's different than what this says, which is, I still am not quite sure why we lost. And if that's the case, that sounds naive and young, and it does shift my view of him, because I thought the way he handled himself throughout the year was so mature in how he handled the media. There was never any uncertainty about what he was saying and how he was saying it. And to say I'm still puzzled, I'm thinking, dude, you've been able to watch tape. You should know, and that's what you should be working on
to make this
different.
Listen to what you just said. I'm still puzzled as to how we lost that game, even after he's had all this time to watch the tape. So it's not in the literal sense of what you're saying it, the meaning of what you're saying. He's saying, I'm looking at the tape.
Right.
I know how good we are as a team.
Right.
I am still puzzled as to how we would lose this game.
Okay, but at this point, shouldn't you know this is how we lost the game and this is what we need to do different next year, or this is how we need to adjust our team?
The answer is most certainly yes.
Okay.
But it's not disingenuous, because he's looking at the moment right then and there of that game, and he's saying, I just don't know how we lost this. I still just don't know how. I've been in games where I knew how we lost the game, but in my mind,
you're more stunned.
It's a stunned moment. It's a stunned moment.
I think we have
a little sympathy, Rick.
I think we have a different interpretation of the timeline on puzzled. All right.
Golly, I don't want to be your son, Rick.
You
lost the game, LeVar.
Everything will be literal. Everything.
You go work, do push-ups.
You can always put it on it.
I don't like the excuses.
You've been in my house.
Okay.
So here's the other question, though. Will the league, and now that he's going to have an opportunity to change, the league's going to have an opportunity to study Lamar, are they going to figure him out next season?
Well, I think the onus is on the offense to continue to expand his game, so you don't get into that pocket, okay, in regards to that. I think the New England Patriots did an excellent job. Everybody knew exactly what you're going to do, but just little intricate details in the offense made it tougher for you to stop New England. Mm. Even though you knew what was going on, you still can do it.
But this comes back to Lamar. This comes to figuring out Lamar.
But it goes back to the offense, offensive coordinator, how they groom and grow him. Can they evolve his game along schematically with the offense?
But you're jumping ahead, because the question for me is,
can Lamar evolve?
Have you seen enough of him from this year where you say, we can play a different way and be successful with it?
I think it's going to be incumbent upon him to evolve if this team is going to continue to have the success that they had last year.
So you're saying the defense is going to catch up there.
Right, so he can't play the same way.
Is the league going to catch up to this? Hell yes, they're going to catch up to this. Because we see what happened with San Francisco when they had Colin Kaepernick in 2012, 2013. Guess what? 14, 15 comes around. 16, he gets benched.
Yeah.
We see 2015, Cam Newton, Carolina Panthers. They go to the Super Bowl. Guess what? The league caught up to that. Now,
Baker Mayfield.
Exactly. So, but like I said earlier, the one thing that this league does not catch up to is being that accurate, precise pocket guy.
But he can throw.
Hold on. I know that. I'm not saying Lamar can't throw. I'm talking about evolving to being that upper echelon elite type of passer. Because let's go ahead and look right now. You see the top guys in this league. You still got Big Ben up there. You still got Breeze. Those guys were drafted in what, 03, 02, 01, 04, something like that. You look at Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, you look at all those guys, and they still are the old heads in the league, but they're still up there. You look at who won the Super Bowl this past year, Pat Mahomes. Yes, Pat Mahomes can elude the pass rush. Yes, he's athletic.
And his legs kept those winning drives
but
alive.
But Pat Mahomes is still what?
A thrower.
What is his superpower? He is very accurate. He has a rifle for an arm. We go and we look at last year's Super Bowl. Who won that? Tom Brady. The one before that, we see Nick Foles.
Super quickly, because we got to go to break. Super quickly, they are not going to catch up to Lamar. You didn't mention Mike Vick and all the names that you mentioned. They will not catch up to Lamar next year. A master does something five times, or does five things 5,000 times. The person that does 5,000 things five times is not trying to be a master. They're trying to be a jack of all trades. If they continue to master what Lamar Jackson does well and continue to build around their run and keep the balance of their pass, Lamar Jackson and the evolution will be fine. The Purple Rain deal will take place in Baltimore and it will be televised. Y'all better leave Lamar Jackson.
5,000 masters, I'm still trying to.
A master does five things 5,000 times while a jack of all trades will try to do 5,000 things five times. Think about that while we go to break.
Oh my God.
Because I might be too deep.
Aristotle.
Joining us now is three-time NBA champ and current agent BJ Armstrong. Let's talk some hoops. Two of the NBA's biggest young stars collided last night as Luka Doncic and the Mavs beat Zion Williamson and the Pelicans in overtime. Luka dropped his 14th triple-double of the season with 30, 17, and 10. As for Zion, he finished with 21 points and seemed a little gassed playing on the second night of a back-to-back for the first time in his career and also a career-high 35 minutes. Jim, put your GM hat on. Which young star would you build a team around? Zion or Luka?
Luka. I mean, and again, we're getting small doses of what Zion could be, okay, in regards to where he's going in the future. His game will continue to improve. But for me, if I'm a GM and I'm looking at how to structure my team in regards to winning championships and who's going to be that leader, okay, I need someone who's versatile, who can command the double team in regards to on the perimeter, okay, that can also make plays for his teammates. And Zion can do a lot of this. But what Luka can do in regards to open space, knocking down jump shots, the passing ability, but also the upside in regards to where he goes, how he creates for his teammates, okay? There's not a lot that you can take away from Luka on the court. He can beat you off the dribble. He may not be over athletic, but he can get to his spots. He can pull up for the jump shot. He can shoot deep. He can finish inside through contact. He gets to the free throw line and is very efficient there. So when you're talking about an all-around player that gives you versatility in your game planning, it's Luka from that perspective. I'll kind of look at, I think, Larry Bird, Dominique Wilkins. Here's a comparison in regards to what you have. Dynamic score with Dominique, but Larry kind of gave you something different all the way around. Do I think the evolvement of Zion will come? Because we're getting small doses.
Well, that's what I was going to say is why you seem certain or not.
You're asking me today.
Like I know, but Zion is an untapped potential.
Right.
But
I don't know if he has the same. If I'm looking at a team.
So you're going Bird in hand.
I'm going Bird in hand. Right now, will Zion eventually grow? Of course. But if we're talking about today, I know what Luka can give me and what he provides to a team and how he opens it up for his teammates. I know he's over here looking at it.
Can't wait to get in on this. All right. Well, what do you got, agent?
If I'm building a team, agent, what have you, I'm building it with Luka.
Mm-hmm. You hinted on it with his versatility. You know, there's four qualities that we look at in building a team. There's speed and quickness. I think those checks go to Zion. But there's size and length. When Luka is going to be 30, 31, 32, he's still going to have tremendous size. He's going to be 6'7", and he's a big man. And he is a point.
Zion's a big man. I mean, 6'6", 280.
I mean, but if Zion loses a little bit of speed and quickness.
And athletic ability,
his game completely changes. Luka's game is not going to change. Luka is a very interesting player. It's because we can't speed him up.
Yeah.
Luka's been around the league now, and no one can speed him up.
Right.
I am really concerned watching him play because he plays the game at a championship pace right now as a young player in this league.
Right.
You can't speed him up. You know, he reminds me of a player that you covered and I played with, Chris Mullin.
Sure.
Right.
We're not going to – I used to always joke with Chris, when are you going to lose a step? Because we don't know when he's going to lose a step. Luka just is moving at his pace.
Right.
You can't tell. And Luka plays the game at a championship pace as a, 22-year-old right now.
Brandon Roy was like that too.
Right.
Zion, the one attraction with Zion is from a box office standpoint.
Yes.
If my business ops are in the meeting, they're probably saying, hey, let's rethink this. The other concern that I have with Luka is, like, he is playing at that pace. He looked beat up to me last night. Like, physically, I am concerned about his – we talk about Zion and have questions because of the knee issues. I have some questions about Luka in terms of can he maintain that body. I know he can perform, and I would pick the same Luka on that. But I actually have issues. I have questions about both of them and their longevity because of their physical.
Right. And I get that, too. But I think what favors Luka is what kind of favored Dirk.
Right.
OK, that his game is going to be his game. Let's say Luka gets injured. Mm. He's not relying on quickness and athleticism to be able to get his shot. He understands how to create space in order to get his jump shot and to get his spot. So he's not relying on that in order for his game to be very efficient. Whereas Zion, again, he's still learning.
Yes.
He's going to learn the intricate ways to not always have to power through and use his athleticism. But if he doesn't develop that the other core of his game, if that athleticism begins to dissipate.
Well, we already saw it last night. I thought the Dallas Mavericks.
Well, he's a little tired from that back-to-back, too.
But they didn't let him feel the defender. They made a point of laying off him. And you can tell that Zion wants to feel you and then make his moves. And when he doesn't, he was tripping. He was taking a flat mid-range jumper. Like, he looked like a different player. And so, to your point, yes, he's going to have to evolve. All right, while the NBA is celebrating Zion and Luka, one former NBA great thinks the league needs to step in and fix what's happening in New York. Charles Oakley weighed in on the Spike Lee James Dolan controversy after Spike says he will no longer be attending Knicks games this season after MSG security hassled him for using the wrong entrance at the arena. Oakley said, quote, "The NBA has got to take a look at this. You can't keep closing your eyes to this. If I'm an owner in the NBA, this guy headlines every other month, every other week with something that don't have nothing to do with winning." All right, Jim, you agree with Oakley? Does the NBA need to step in to fix the Knicks?
No, because they can't. In regards to setting, we talked about this yesterday. You can't set a precedent because Jim Dolan is not running an organization the way you want him. If he was affecting the bottom line number-wise revenue for the rest of the league in regards to how he operated, now there's calls for concern and owners can get together and say, listen, this is affecting not only just the Knicks, but the overall revenue generation in the league. Okay? So as much as you want to do, and I used the Sterling example yesterday, as a precedent here, it was something egregious that was done that allowed the owners to get together to say, we can't have this.
Right.
But for years, they understood that Sterling wasn't going to pay money. He wasn't going to improve his facilities. He didn't care because the revenue that was shared among the teams was getting distributed, the TV money.
And going into his pocket.
It was going in his pocket. As much as they, because if you do it with one person now, okay, what about this owner over here, he's not doing it. This owner over here is not doing it. Now the NBA can't just go out and say, okay, Jim, you need to sell the team.
Well, you know, I think it was Shakespeare who said, the drama belongs on the stage. We continue to talk about the New York Knicks and everything that's happening off the court, right? We're talking about everything other than what they're doing on the court. I'm gonna try to give you a little, you know, secret or a little behind the scenes look here. Every executive in the league understands that the New York is a very attractive job. It's a very attractive job in many ways, right? They've drafted well. R.J. Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, Trier, Knox, they've drafted well. They have excellent contracts to work with. All their players are on 1- and 2-year deals. They don't have any poison contracts that are just long-term, right? They have an ability. It's New York City, so free agency is going to always be there. Every player is a brand, but we also understand that New York is not for everyone, okay? And then when you look at the
big— they have not been able to land a big-named free agent.
I get that. They haven't been able to land, but it's available. Everyone in this league knows that if you go to New York City and you win in New York City, that's a different animal all into itself. That's a fact.
Okay.
That's a fact. And then they have young players who we know from within could be really good players in a year or two. R.J. Barrett could be an all-star. Mitchell Robinson is a shown, he's shown flashes of what they're doing. Every executive understands in this league that that's a very attractive job. And we have to give the people their credit because they have made it attractive of what they're doing right now.
But I'm not saying fix the front office. And to your point, yes, I know that you can't move Jim Dolan. Fix doesn't mean remove Jim Dolan. But look, the NBA once upon a time, one of its slogans was, it's fantastic. You have Jim Dolan. He's not, what he's doing is he's going after fans, including one of your most visible, Spike Lee,
right,
who loves the Knicks and loves the game of basketball. He made a freaking movie about it, for God's sake. That's who you are disenfranchising. That's who you're alienating. So from a PR standpoint, the league has to publicly, and I'm sure privately they've made a call, but publicly you have to say, we're going to talk to Jim Dolan.
About what? About Spike Lee?
Yes,
that's not a league problem. That's an individual.
No, this is the league. This is a league problem. The perception that Jim Dolan can abuse and abuse any fan that he wants, the ticket buying public. That he can.
You're talking about with the other fans too.
Yes, the whole package.
Okay, I'm speaking about Spike Lee. You're talking about the whole package with.
But Spike Lee leads the parade.
Yeah, no, but I think.
Why is Spike Lee different as a fan?
What I'm saying. Okay, what is Adam Silver going to do? Allow Spike Lee to come back through the employee entrance?
It's not that.
You saying they got to make a public statement that says what?
That we are talking to Jim Dolan about what's going on with the New York Knicks.
Okay.
Nothing may change. But the NBA, in saying nothing, suggests that they are quietly condoning this behavior. And it's gone to the point now with who you are. Look, if you want to fire GMs, if you want to mistreat coaches, even former players, if you want to do all that, okay, it's not a good look. It's stupid. But I can't stop you. But when you start to take shots at fans, when you start to mistreat the people that support your franchise and your league, the league has to say, okay, we need to talk about
this. So you're saying fix it from a public perspective, not getting rid of.
Can't get rid of.
So that's where I'm looking
at. Show that you care.
I'm looking at the question in regards to kind of getting rid of, because I know Oakley's like, get rid of them. You're talking more so from the public perception perspective.
Yes.
Get that. I agree.
Speaking of, when I turn gray, I hope I look as good as Charles. Man.